Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys, the Movies, and boy, oh boy, you betcha we got a very busy show.
I was trying to do
a Sarah Palin impression, but that's not happening,
no.
I guess. But we do, we have a...
You were nowhere near Sarah Palin. You were so far away from Sarah Palin, you were like in Miami.
Fair enough. But we do have a very, very, very busy show. We've got guests.
Yes.
Teleporting into the magical studio in the sky.
Allegedly. Yeah.
That's about the best we can say about that. We're going to have Joe Neff.
Joe Neff.
From the thing.
Would you like me to do the introductions that you're having?
Introduce him, because I can introduce the other one.
Yeah.
I know him.
The first guest we're going to have is Joe Neff from the, it's the all-night horror movie marathon in Columbus, Ohio. He's going to talk a little bit about the marathon. And I know if you're not in Columbus, maybe not
you should
as
just
relevant.
Be jealous.
You should be jealous what because up? It's an all-night horror movies and obscure stuff, weird things, Italian horror, and some classics from the 70s. So it's definitely worth checking out. We'll talk more about that later in a later segment.
Right. And our other guest is a close personal friend of the show, Crazy Legs Conti from New York, live from New York.
That's right.
We'll have him on later. He participated in the Netflix movie watching championship last week.
Yes, and he'll give us his kind of sort of blow-by-blow description of what happened and some of the shenanigans that went on behind the scenes. That's in the internet-only segment. So
apparently, and we were also involved in the shenanigans, not us physically, but our namesake.
Well,
your
namesake and so, somebody's mother. And
speaking of namesakes and places that you can get a hold of said names, if you'd like to get a hold of us, you can go to fatguysthemovies.com. You can also get us on iTunes, search Fat Guys the Movies in the iTunes store. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. If you'd like to call us, which we did get a voicemail this week.
That's right.
614-388-8735. That was we got a voicemail from Dawn in California.
Yes, and we're actually going to respond because she actually brings up a very interesting point. We'll save that for the next segment because we have a little more time there.
We think,
but yeah, right now we better jump right in because we got four movies opening this week. We got to talk about.
Yeah,
the Folk first show. One. Why don't you introduce this one, Neil? Since you blurbed it.
Yes, the first one is City of Ember. This is a family friendly story of a post apocalyptic city buried miles beneath the crumbling ashes of civilization and two young denizens who are trying to find a way out.
Ember, time to support life.
What would count down to nothing? It sounds like doomsday.
Generator's broke.
Can't be fixed.
Without it, we won't survive.
I have to find a way out of here.
Maybe there's a way out of Ember.
Keep your eyes peeled. Look around every corner. You never know where you might find a clue.
It's too dangerous.
There's a way out. I have proof.
Show me.
Was that Shakespeare?
Yeah, dude. I wrote that by myself. I'm so proud. That's came directly out of my review from filmschoolrejects.com.
Well, since you are talking about your review, tell us what you thought of.
I liked it.
The movie.
Okay. It was a post-apocalyptic city buried beneath the earth.
No, under the crumbling ashes of civilization.
And I believe we reviewed Monster House in 2006.
Well, you and I didn't. No, we weren't doing.
We weren't doing it back then. All right. Well, but I do remember Monster House, and it was directed by a gentleman named Gil Kenan, who first-time director, very impressive outing.
Fantastic movie.
Fantastic movie. This his second film, also a very well-made film, and I say family-friendly in the description, but it's really, I think Fox Walden's trying to sell it as a kid's movie. It's not really a little kid's movie. It's more of like the 8-year-old and up type movie.
Well, maybe even a little older. Yeah. This is not, if you got kids that went and saw Beverly Hills Chihuahua last week and were like, oh my God, this is the greatest movie ever. Right. You may not want to take them to City of Ember.
Yep. It gets a little scary at certain points. It's a little dark and a little gloomy. Like I said, it's about a city underneath the earth that's been there for 200 years because the world was ending. So there's some darker things to it, but it's really an adventure movie.
The whole shtick is that they were supposed to, after 200 years, kind of have this things go into motion and something went wrong, and so they're sort of outliving the city, and
the city's kind of falling apart around.
Yeah, and little kid, and not little kids, but you know, sort of like preteen and teenage kids are trying to find a way out and discover the plan. I will say this about the movie: it looked great. It was generally well acted, and it had some really really neat high concept stuff. It is a little thick and heavy for kids. I don't know if it's going to quite find an audience.
It is the tough part. But I think it's one of those movies that if you had a early teen kid that you could go and both the adult and the youngin Could enjoy it.
I do want to see it again. I might take my son, my oldest son, because he's talking about wanting to see it. I'll be curious to see what he likes, because you can identify with the kids trying to save the civilization. There's some plot holes, and for the plan that they have to get him out, it's a pretty convoluted plan.
Yeah,
could have been planned better.
I'm sure it could have been simpler, but I was impressed with, you know, Tim Robbins is in it. He gives a fairly solid performance, though he's not in it very much. Bill Murray's a lot of fun in the movie. He plays this. You know, city where all these people are, you know, starving, they're running out of food. He plays this, you know, totally fat mayor.
He's the fat, corrupt politician.
So, but the two young kids, Harry Treadaway and Saoirse.
Is that how you say it?
I think. Ronan. The girl from Atonement. Apparently she has a personality, which I did not know from seeing Atonement.
Okay,
she lets it all fly in this movie.
Yeah.
The personality, at least.
Okay.
So, I'm saying totally rocks. I liked it.
Wow.
I was very impressed by it, especially since I saw it very early in the morning and I was sleepy. It woke me up.
I'm really on the fence, and it's just leaning into kind of rocks right now. I'm really on the fence on this one.
Fair enough. So,
let's move to the next one, The Express, which I didn't see.
Oh, and this is the true story, the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy.
Mr. Brown, what's it like at Syracuse for men like us?
It's not that different than a lot of places.
But Swartzwelder, he's one of the best coaches in college ball.
Move, move, move! What are you smiling at?
Right about now, I bet you're wondering what happened to that nice gentleman that begged you to come here, huh? Hey!
Come on, let's go.
What are you guys studying?
A little bit of everything.
We're on the football team.
In that.
I don't really know too much about football.
Neither does he.
Can't let him treat you like that.
I say nothing.
Now, I did see this while you were out seeing horror movies.
Yes.
Called, you know, we're going to talk about that in the next segment. But this is about the story of Ernie Davis, which for us, it's kind of a local story. At least for me, it is, because I grew up in Cleveland. Yeah. And it's about Ernie Davis, who grew up in New York, went to Syracuse University, won the Heisman, and was drafted by the Cleveland Browns. And he ended up never playing a game in the NFL. He died of leukemia. It's a very sad story.
Thanks for letting everybody know what the movie happened.
Anybody who's either a football fan or has Wikipedia knows the end of this movie.
But those who don't, you may want to go back and change the past.
That's the whole story.
Not listen to the show.
But, you know, just
Chris,
like,
Neil, that is the whole story.
Well, no,
you just gave a total spoiler for everything.
Yeah, but that's not the point of the, like, that's not why you would go see a movie like this. You go see a movie like this to kind of see the details of his life, and it's... It was the late 50s, so you have a lot of the civil rights movement happening around the film. So it reminded me a lot of Remember the Titans, but, you know, with one guy.
Remember the Titan.
It was Remember the Titan. But there's something to be said about these football movies. And, you know, I played football up until my sophomore year in high school. Mm. And
when you took a ballet?
But, you know, there's something to be said about these movies that, despite the fact that you know the general story, you know, even
or you don't, but now you do.
Movies like Remember the Titans, Invincible, they still get to you. It's still a very emotional movie, and I thought it was very, very well done. Mm-hmm. You know, and it still captured, I think it was a very respectful spirit that, you know, it had. So I think if you're into football and, you know, you really like those, you know,
inspirational football movies
that end with someone dying, I guess. No, but it's very inspirational. It's not totally sad at the end, though there were people crying. So I say it kind of rocks. I thought it was well made. I expected it to be a little shticky, but it wasn't. So it was good.
I didn't see it. But when we come back, we'll talk about movies I did see in the next segment.
Fair enough. We hath returned.
Neil has an announcement. He wants to tell you in Citizen Kane, Rosebud's a sled.
It's a sled.
Psycho, Norman Bates is Vader's mother.
Vader's Luke's father.
Let's just rant. Any other movies?
I would argue that's talking about the Ernie Davis story is not really a spoiler, because it's a true story, and the reason they made the movie is because his story is so sad. So,
but not well known.
So. Anyways, speaking of movies that aren't really that sad, next up is...
Or true.
But based on the true War on Terror, I suppose, is Ridley Scott's Body of Lies, in which Leonardo DiCaprio stars as a CIA agent on the ground in the Middle East trying to thwart a global terrorist event.
Ed Hoffman is the head of the division, but he does not know enough until he steals it from the guy on the ground, and that's me.
Rules of the day. The car gets immobilized, start shooting. Nobody gets traded, everybody dies.
Same as every day?
You got it.
We're here to protect you.
You can't even protect yourselves.
Zooming in.
Hey there, little buddy.
Hang up the phone. Are you on the line?
Yep.
Listen, you are attracting attention. Now, I will handle this on my own.
I'll let me jump in on this one first.
I wasn't going to talk.
This is the thing. Ridley Scott's a fantastic filmmaker. He always does a very good job directing. It looks great.
And he always brings Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe's in every movie he's ever made. He's even going to go back and digitally insert him into, like, Alien.
Oh, sweet.
I think so. But
the acting's always... He's going to replace What's-Her-Name. Or he's going to play the alien.
He'll play the Kris Kristofferson character. Nice. The Tom Skerritt character. Sorry, I get those two mixed up. But... You know, it's always very well acted. But this movie kind of reminds me a little bit of Kingdom of Heaven, if you saw the Crusades movie a couple years back.
Mm-hmm.
That looked great, well acted, but because he's so truthful to the history and the real life things, it actually just becomes too complex and to understand really well. I really kind of got lost and confused, and it's like, wait, who's doing this, and why is this again? Why does that one Middle Eastern guy look so much like Andy Garcia? And there's all these things kind of thrown at you, and they're like, let's go get Halam Salim, and then no, let's go get Kashim Ali, and they all. I mean, it's going to sound totally white and racist, but all the names sound the same, and it's really, really hard to follow.
You would not last very long in the Middle East.
No, I wouldn't. I would last 6 seconds.
But, oddly enough, it's interesting that you bring that up because I felt like it went the other way. I felt like it traded authenticity for drama, like for being a more exciting Hollywood movie rather than movies like, you know, Lions for Lambs that tried to you know, either be politically heavy-handed or tried to, you know, be very, very accurate.
Yeah. Well, see,
this one I felt like, he's like, let's just make kind of like a Hollywood action movie, and war on terror thing is just kind of there.
It was somewhere between The Kingdom, which was just the Hollywood action movie.
I felt like it was closer to The Kingdom than it would be to a more authentic movie.
Like A Mighty Heart last year, which is Pearl story.
What I'm thinking
if you don't know the Pakistani politics...
Right.
And the politics of the Middle East, it's totally utterly confusing, but I'm sure very accurate. Yeah. This one, it just seemed, I don't know, there was something just missing. I just felt like, I was like, nah, I just didn't feel.
It felt a little forced, even for international crime drama type movie.
It's not his best movie. And then they had this stupid love story between Leonardo DiCaprio's character and the Iranian woman.
It needed a sex scene, is basically what you're saying.
Well, that would have helped, or they could have just completely cut the story. And then there's also a scene in there that's like lifted almost exactly right out of The Kingdom, you know, with that I was like, I've seen this before.
Yeah. So. Although I will say this, and this is something that I would like people to ponder.
Sasquatch.
As they go, if they go see this, you will only understand if you go and see the movie. My hand hurt when I left the theater. My right hand was like in pain after watching the movie.
What?
Literally, my hand was
okay. Well, yeah, you don't have to do what they do on the screen yourself.
But it hurt to watch.
Okay.
But I'm gonna say kind of rocks on this one because I thought it was an above average film, as I expected it to be.
Yeah, I'm gonna say
I expected it to be good.
I'm gonna say kind of sucks because I think Ridley Scott could do better.
Okay, fair enough. Cool. What's next?
Let's move on to the next one, Quarantine, which Neil did not see. It was, let me preempt this by when I came to the Magical Studio in Sky to start recording, I said to Neil, I'm like, look, you know, you would have just completely,
it would have not gone well.
Yeah, you would have needed Depends like throughout the entire movie.
Because I went to see the football movie instead.
You would not have done well doing.
Well, introduce it. What are
it
we
is
talking about?
Movie Super Rabies tears through a quarantine apartment complex, Cloverfield style.
Apartment's about to begin the rescue process. Police say that she lives alone. She's not very social. You know.
We're here to help you.
Yeah.
Oh God! Oh my God! We have to get out of here. Is he gonna keep? Lock it! Lock it! Lock it!
Lock it! I literally looked at that description and thought it said super babies tear through a quarantine apartment. The movie is called Quarantine, and it's starring one of my future ex-wives, mm-hmm. Jennifer Carpenter, yes. who's also on the best show on television, Dexter.
I thought the best show on television for you was Gossip Girl.
No.
That's you are the Gossip other, Girl fan.
That's my favorite network show. It's on the CW. Dexter's on cable.
Oh, okay.
And Sons of Anarchy's on cable. But no, Jennifer Carpenter, very hot.
She's good, but you know, here's the thing with the quarantine. This is an intense, scary movie, and I enjoyed it. And it's like for the experience. It's not as like jarring as Cloverfield, but it's the basic thing where it's all this one tape. Problem is, a couple things wrong with it. The biggest thing is the scene everyone knows of her lying on the ground in the green.
Oh.
The last scene of the movie.
Oh, you had to go there, didn't you?
It is, but that's not a spoiler because it's in the flipping trailer, literally the last shot of the movie. And so
they do start the trailer by saying that like nobody lives.
Yeah, and so it's there's no surprises. So
it's like Blair Witch.
It is one of those things where you're like, let's just watch this thing just turn into an absolute chaos.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that they get in this apartment, they're doing a ride along with the fire department, and they get in this apartment complex, and there's people who basically have rabies. You know, it's a fast moving rabies where it's like sort really? Of like
yeah, that's they, it. It's rabies.
Yeah,
like, well, it's not like bitten. The rage virus, or
well, it's like the rage virus in the sense that it takes like 15 minutes.
How lame
to
is
take
that?
Effect.
They couldn't come up with something more creative than these people have rabies and they want to kill each other.
Well, no, but it's really creepy because since it is a real disease, it's just it's right, accelerated. But the problem with it is they're like, why are they quarantining us? I'm like. Because you have people with rabies. No one quick puts two and two together that they're quarantined because there are people who are there who are like
who have
freaking
super
out
rabies.
And are yeah. ridiculously
infectious.
Yeah, infectious. So
contagious.
And they do have the thing like Jennifer Carpenter's character sort of gets into she's sort of like the girl from Blair Witch who is almost trying too hard to be not, you know, to be too much in character where she's like,
right.
you got to keep filming this because people want to know.
Oh yeah.
So there's a little
it's
bit
like
of
the
that.
Scene in Cloverfield where
they're climbing across
like,
buildings.
No, people are going to need to know this. Yeah. They're going to need to see this because we're all going to die.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, I mean, it was,
oh,
it,
come on.
It, and
I
would have
thrown the camera out the window and been
well,
gone.
And you do watch the movie and you say, wow, you know, you could have everyone just like at one point they're like, wait, we need to gather everybody here into the atrium. Why? So that everyone can die? If it were me, I'd be holed up in my closet.
Right.
I'd have a pack of Funyuns and, you know, some...
And a mask of some kind?
A mask?
Like one of those masks that you would wear, the doctor's masks, so that you don't...
Oh, well
inhale the...
Well, that's not going to protect you when a rabies-infected guy tries to eat your heart.
Oh. Oh, he eats you.
Well, they bite you. It's like dogs.
Why would they want to bite each other?
Because they're... Have rabies. Rabbit, right. That's kind of how that works.
This is why I own a gun. I would just like to say, this is why I own a big gun.
You don't own a big gun.
I do.
No, you don't.
Don't make me prove it. That's not true.
I do. But no, I have to say quarantine. I'm going to say quarantine rocked.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, that's bold.
It is bold.
That's bold. Normally, this is a movie that we would give a preemptive suck to, but they screened it.
Speaking of preemptive sucks, segue. Yes. Let's... Dawn
just play,
from
just
California.
Play the phone call. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, no, we can play the phone call.
Going out of the break?
We'll play the phone call going out of the break. But
and then we'll answer the question on the way out.
Yes.
Okay. I'm down with that. I'm whatever, however you want to play it, man.
Yeah.
This is your show.
No. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll do it in the next segment. Okay. So if you're hearing this on the radio,
I had that good segue and everything planned.
That's a great segue, but
you just denied me.
I'll explain to you during the break where your fatal flaw was. So. But anyways,
generally my fatal flaw is that I show up,
or as Eric Cartman said once, a fetal flaw.
Fair enough.
Which is, I'm getting very much into South Park lately.
I've noticed, yeah. But I couldn't believe that you hadn't seen the Warcraft episode until recently.
I did watch the Make Love Not Warcraft actually this week. And what I know what it
bathroom.
Is, I took
bathroom.
yeah, that one. That's pretty shocking.
Yep, exactly.
I took from Wikipedia the list of all the South Park episodes, and now I have them in a Word document so I can delete them as I see them. Because there's like something like a dozen seasons. And like Fox sent me the 11th season of The Simpsons.
Sweet.
Which I now have to watch.
Which is also pretty funny.
Yeah, and it comes in a commemorative case with Krusty the Clown's face.
Awesome.
It's really kind of cool, but it doesn't fit on your DVD shelf.
Oh, fair enough. All well, right. As we go to a break, we're going to allow you to ponder Krusty the Clown's face. on your DVD shelf.
Hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh yeah.
Hi guys, it's Dawn from California again. I'm still listening, love your show. You haven't offended me yet, so keep going. But I have a question, and I'm not saying anything bad about how you guys do it. I just don't understand it. I don't understand how you do a preemptive suck because you can't see the film because you haven't seen it ahead of time. Isn't that like me as a kindergarten teacher evaluating a kid I've never met? I just don't understand how that works. Why wouldn't you just wait till the next week and see it like everybody else? I'm not trying to be rude, so please don't get upset. But I love your show. I'm going to stick a great thing on the iTunes review, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for calling, Dawn from California. She's one of our big listeners or big fans.
We don't know her physical size.
Well, yeah. Of course. But, you know, I'm sure she knows, a beautiful lady.
Yeah.
She has her teenage kids listen to it, and she teaches kindergarten. I'm sure she plays it for them every Monday morning for the kindergarten class.
Just the internet-only segment.
Exactly.
We're very educational.
We teach the kids.
I don't know if people realize this.
A lot of stuff. But here's the thing. She did bring up a good point. The preemptive
suck. She basically
suck.
Called us out.
She called us out on the preemptive suck. And I see where you're coming from, Dawn. Very good point. However, this is our justification for it. Over the last, say, 4 or 5 years, Hollywood has become more and more prone to not screening movies for critics. And they do this oftentimes with movies that they either think are not going to play to an audience, or sometimes, like, for example, they did not screen the Hannah Montana 3D concert to critics because it was already all sold out for every show ever happening.
Right.
So
that, and there was Chronicles of Narnia, where it was like they just assumed that it was going to do well, so they don't need critics.
Chronicles of Narnia, it was also rumored that they, and this gets into the greater thing, there's a lot of times studios will not screen it. And it's implied that there's something they're afraid of. They don't want reviews. With Narnia, one of the issues was people suspected that what it was is they didn't want people to say it was too dark.
Right.
And so they didn't
screen
it.
They didn't want people to expose it for what it really was.
Yeah, which it was. It was kind of dark for a Narnia movie. But most often, when they don't screen a movie, it's because they're afraid it's going to get terrible, terrible reviews.
Yeah.
Examples of the movie, like Heath Ledger's movie, The Order, which was terrible, from Justin to Kelly. No one screened that.
Therefore, we feel it necessary to give it a terrible review despite the fact that we didn't see it.
Every now and then you'll see a movie that they don't screen, and it's actually pretty good. Like all the Saw movies I've enjoyed. But I like horror movies.
But those are genre films. They don't really, I mean, people are going to go see those either way.
Yeah, Lionsgate a lot of times won't screen genre films. If it's a Dane Cook movie, generally they don't screen it because they know that they think the critics are going to just unload on it.
They don't like that liberal media getting in on their films.
Well, sometimes it's the, sometimes they don't, sometimes movies are actually pretty decent. Vacancy was a movie they didn't screen for critics, but still was pretty good.
Everybody makes mistakes.
But 9 times out of 10, usually if they're not screening it for critics, it's because they don't want advanced reviews to run. And they're really terrified now because internet critics like me and Neil can go see the movie at 10 o'clock on a Friday morning on the Eastern time zone, watch the movie and have the review up before anyone's seen the movie in LA. So it's really, really, they got their panties in a bunch of
them. We are pretty dangerous.
So yeah, we are that powerful.
But it's really more about smacking the studio back in the face than whether or not we saw the movie.
Yeah, I mean, we can. And there have been times I've gone and seen the movie and I'm like, well, it was a preemptive suck, but I kind of liked it. So yeah.
Who knows? Anyways. Sweet. Let's jump in. We got something to do. We got an interview.
Got an interview with Joe Neff. He is one of the master of ceremonies of the overnight 24-hour horror movie marathon in Columbus, Ohio. We'll talk a little bit about that if you're around or near Columbus. Next weekend, check it out, Saturday night to Sunday morning. Well, here I am with Joe Neff, who is the master of ceremonies at these?
I think technically I'm the co-master of ceremonies. I often refer to my partner, Bruce, as the master of ceremonies emeritus because he's the king. I'm more like kind of the court jester, if you will.
And that would be Bruce Bartu from who does the other science fiction marathons and the horror marathons. He's been doing them since the 80s, correct?
1987 was his first one for sci-fi, 88 for horror. I think you called me once like the Dark Prince of the horror marathon. Yeah, I'll take that.
Oh, I did. That was pretty eloquent of me. Well, we're going to talk. Is this the Incredible Two-Headed Marathon? Are we calling it that?
Yes, it's the fifth Incredible Two-Headed Marathon, subtitled Don't Go in the Drexel. We were trying to think of a subtitle because we've done one every year, and this year we just said, Don't Go in the Drexel. Sure, that's good.
And this is on October 18th starting at 10 o'clock at night at the Drexel Theater in Bexley, Ohio. Goes till noon the next day. Do I get all that right?
Yes, that's everything.
Well, tell us what we're going to see this year, because you actually have a really interesting lineup. This is not something you've done enough of these marathons. You don't just show Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, things that horror files have watched a million times. What are our lineups and what are the new ones? And just kind of talk through each of the movies and why they're significant and why you chose them.
Sure. Well, we've got what I think is going to be the Midwest premiere of Let the Right One In, which just got picked up for a U.S. remake, I think. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it, but go ahead and tell the audience.
Yeah, or the remake, I mean. It's this critically acclaimed Swedish teen vampire film, and I haven't seen it. I know a little bit about it. Played down at the Fantastic Fest in Austin, Texas a few months ago. I think it played at Toronto, too. Did it play at Toronto?
I don't know. I didn't go. I'm a snob. You pointed out earlier off the air that I'm an American snob, wow. So I didn't go to Toronto.
Ouch. Well, it's supposed to be really good, and you know, we've heard nothing but good things about it. So we have that. We're still pursuing another premiere, so we'll see what happens with that. We have a rare 35mm screening of Mario Bava's classic film Kill Baby Kill, also known as Operation Paruzza in Italian, which means Operation Fear. Why it's Kill Baby Kill in the U.S., I'm not sure. But it's this very influential, atmospheric classic. Martin Scorsese's referenced it many times as being a personal favorite. We have John Carpenter's...
Hold on a second. I want to ask you about Kill Baby Kill. When was this made? Because obviously Let the Right One In is relatively recent. What was the release date on Kill Baby?
Yeah, that would probably help. It's, I believe, 1965.
Ooh, a 60s
movie. I'll admit, it is our requisite 60s pre-1970 movie. But it's worth seeing. It's one that, you know, it's on, you can see it on video in this box that Anchor Bay did, but the chance to see a Bava film on the big screen is pretty rare these days, so, and it should be a pretty nice print.
Okay, and I know you have a specific love for Italian horror, but would you put this above Dario Argento stuff? Because I've given you some crap about Dario Argento stuff.
Well, that's tough. I mean, if Argento is kind of like the second generation of major Italian horror, Bava's the king. I mean, he's the guy who set the stage for Argento, and in some ways, yes, I would put him above Argento. He's much more consistent and stylish throughout his career than Argento. Even though some of Argento's peaks, you could argue, are a little bit higher than Bava's, but that's a whole other discussion.
Well, what do we have up next? I think we have some classic American ones that people have probably seen already.
Yeah, or they've seen the remakes of them. The slightly inferior remakes. Yeah, we have John Carpenter's original version of The Fog, which is just, you know, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle of that great stuff he did at the end of the 70s with Halloween and Escape from New York and The Thing. But, you know, it's a really nice low-key ghost story. And the cast is really great. It's Adrian Barbeau and Jamie Lee Curtis and Janet Leigh and Hal Holbrook. You know, and it hasn't shown at a marathon in a long time.
And it does not star Superboy.
Unfortunately, no, it does not star Superboy. I know, all you teen fans out there in... What's your website again? It's the Film School.
Fat guys in the Movies Film School Region.
Yeah. All your teen fans for the Fat Guys of the Movies are going to be very disappointed. But anyway, we also have Wes Craven's original version of The Hills Have Eyes, which unfortunately again is not the remake with, you know, a nice younger cast, but it's still a really raw kind of gut punch classic and not screened too often.
Now is it a complete? I know that. Is the original Hills Have Eyes one of those movies that you have the prints aren't always all the same, or is it pretty much going to be the same thing you've seen?
It's not like Last House on the Left, where a lot of the prints tend to be choppy or have things cut. Pretty sure that most of the prints I've seen of Hills Have Eyes have been complete, or if they're not complete, someone just took a little bit of footage out. But we showed it last time at Studio 35 in 2002, and it was pretty complete then, so should be okay.
So like, you know, for the graphic violence and the sexual assault, all that stuff's going to be on. I mean, and not that I'm like pegging my audience.
I sure hope so, yeah. So then after we get that those nice, classy 70s horror master classics, then we really go for the bottom of the barrel. And we, after 1 year of promising we were going to show it, we have Umberto Lenzi's international cannibal classic Make Them Die Slowly, banned in many countries and provinces and households.
What year was this?
Oh, Make Them Die Slowly is... I'm getting old and forgetful, Kevin. This has been doing this too long. I think it's 79, 1980.
Oh, so it's a classic. Yeah. Is it now? Where along, you know, speaking of cannibal movies, a couple of years ago you showed Cannibal Holocaust. Where does it fall along the lines of that one?
I would say it's right alongside it. If Cannibal Holocaust has a little bit more social commentary, what there is in that, Make Them Die Slowly is a little bit more purely exploitative. But, you know, and anything's a classic. Do we show anything but classics? You can apply that to anything.
Well, not anymore, apparently. So, and then the last one, I think you saved this one for the last.
Yeah, for all you fans of Lord of the Rings and the new Peter Jackson who wins awards and directs films about happy hobbits. It's Peter Jackson's kind of semi-lost second major film, Meet the Feebles, which I've always described as like the Muppets on acid. It's basically this Muppet puppet show called The Feebles Variety Hour, and it's behind the scenes of The Feebles Variety Hour and all the really depraved and nasty and rotten, terrible, graphic, gross things that they do. And it's one of those where people, even people who are not easily offended, sometimes get offended by this movie.
Is it like, I remember, and I don't know if you actually were old enough to go see this, because this was an X-rated marathon. They did the schlock around the clock one year. This is like 20 years ago. And they showed Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS. Did you see that one?
You know, I'm going to really lose a little point off of my marathon card. I've never actually seen any of the Ilsa movies, believe it or not. But I know enough about them that, yeah, it would be comparable to that. Less Nazism, but more drug use and other activities like that.
So it's basically behind the scenes of H.R. Puff and stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Now, one thing I have to ask you, because I'm a big fan of the marathons I've gone for a long time, and I have, at times, I've always found it as being a fun thing to snark at the screen. At times, and I have to bring this up because they never set out rules, and it's a smaller house this time. It's not as deep, so you can't, like, sequester the troublemakers in the corner. Are any of these movies that are going to lend themselves to silliness and shenanigans?
Of course not. Please. No.
So like Meet the Feebles is pristine. You can't touch it. No talking.
It'll be coming out on Criterion DVD soon, so I wouldn't mess with it. No, it's the odd thing is, and I know we've talked about this before, is the dynamic of the Columbus Horror Marathons and Science Fiction Marathons has almost flipped over the years. It seems like there's a lot more talking during science fiction now than horror. In fact, the horror crowds, when I was doing them at Studio 35, I was always amazed at how fairly respectful the horror crowds were, and how oftentimes I would watch a movie with them and I would think, well, it's okay, you can say something, or you can react or laugh or scream or whatever. It's tough to say. Meet the Feebles, Make Them Die Slowly, I'm sure, is going to get some people up in arms or talking or whatever like that. The others, it's a tonal thing. Ideally, if it's always said at the marathons, look at the person next to you, whatever they're doing, and don't do it.
And that's worked perfectly over there. That's kept everyone alive.
Yeah, always kept them alive. But I'm stunned still at the horror marathons that we've done the last 4 years, the all-nighters. The crowds have been great. Even when people talk during things or make fun of things, it's never over the top. It's always pretty appropriate. And even if there's someone annoying, they usually shut up in time. So, and I know I'm shooting myself in the foot by saying that, but I have faith in the marathon crowd.
Well, that's good to know. But this is, and tickets are on sale now in Columbus, Ohio. You can also go to, is there a website where you can buy them in case somebody wants to come from out of town?
You can actually go to horrormarathon.com or scifimarathon.com, and they're both connecting to the same message board. There's a PayPal account that you can order online from, and we have it set up. And if you go to the message board link off of horrormarathon.com or scifimarathon.com, it will lead you to a link that talks about buying tickets and information about that. In fact, I think actually too, on horrormarathon.com, there's ticket information on with the PayPal link as well. And you can buy them at the Drexel here in Columbus in beautiful downtown Bexley where it's being held, and also the Laughing Ogre Comics up on North High Street.
Okay. And they're $20 a piece?
$20 a piece all the way. No advance and same day difference in tickets. It's $20 either or.
Thanks so much, Joe, for being on the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the internet only segment, which means anything can happen. And one of those
including a guest.
One of those anythings that can happen. We have a guest on the line. This is one of our first guests in a long, long time.
But by far the coolest one we've had.
Definitely the coolest one. We have live from New York, sort of. Crazy Legs Conti. Welcome to the show, Crazy Legs.
Thank you. You know, I always wanted to be in the magical studio in the sky. I thought it would be a little bigger, but I see that the jacuzzi in the corner has lukewarm temperature water for all the Hollywood starlets that stop by. So very pleased to be here.
It still has that film of makeup on from all the drag queens and old ladies who get in the hot tub.
I have no response to this.
No, but we all know Crazy Legs Connie has been a fan of the show for a long time. We reviewed his Zen and the Art of Competitive Eating.
Which was a very educational experience for me.
Very interesting movie. And we're talking to him because you left us a voicemail last week letting us know you're getting ready to go in for, what is it called, the Netflix Popcorn Bowl?
It was the Netflix Movie Watching Championship, competing for the Popcorn Bowl trophy, $10,000 in prize money, and a lifetime free subscription to Netflix. And basically what it was a giant plexiglass barn in the center of Times Square, Military Island, where you can either join the Army or you can join 8 participants to try to break the Guinness Book of World Records for continuous movie watching, which was 120 hours and 23 minutes. That's 5 days of watching.
And what were the parameters? You had 10-minute breaks between movies? Is that what it was?
Yeah, the difficulty in the scenario is that there were the Guinness rules, which state you cannot look away from the screen. Basically, 2 plasma TVs set up, comfortable couches. You had people watching to make sure you had eye contact with the screen, that you weren't glassy-eyed. 0 drug tolerance policy, so you couldn't, you know, be out with the strippers doing crystal meth the night before. And furthermore, you had 2 hours movies, basically. 90 minutes was the criterion, and you had a 10-minute break. And in that 10-minute break, you could use the bathroom, you could eat, you could sleep. 8 contestants entered in a kind of an odd, call it a reality TV scenario. But there was really a group, you know, Netflix has a collective queue where we got to submit films, and they did some programming, but 120 hours of movies is like 56 movies nonstop. So
wow. So tell us. I want to jump to the chase. I want to cut to the chase here because I'm curious. I know you dropped out at what, like hour 36 or something?
33, which was 2 days in. I was selected not. You know, I've eaten my way out of an 8-foot box of popcorn. That earned me the moniker, the Houdini of cuisine. I've certainly been involved in odd food-related and endurance things, but not. I'm a cinephile at best. I love bad 80s movies. I own an enormous Spring Break and cheerleading film collection on VHS. In the modern era, my local video store has been folded into a pizza place. I know that would appeal to you guys, but for me, going Netflix was the only option. So this was sort of an invitation to see if I could endure, if I could watch movie after movie. And in a sense, I really enjoyed it. I really liked the notion that, you know, the center of Times Square, there's so much going on, and all you had to do was live in this, you know, plexiglass barn and watch movies.
What movie was it that you dropped? Was it Fletch?
Well, what ended up happening was earlier, I went 24 hours. I was very worried, actually, at the first movie, the first couple movies, because I'm an active New Yorker. The moment I sit down, I generally fall asleep. I have barstool narcolepsy. So I over-caffeinated a little bit to get through the first couple movies. The third movie was Ghostbusters, which, you know, I'm singing along for the Ray Parker Jr. soundtrack. And that just put me in the right mindset. 24 hours later, we were watching my selection, the Marx Brothers, Night at the Opera, and the black and white knocked somebody else out.
Yeah, nice.
So I went out when I wanted to go out. Hour 33, end crawl of Fletch, the Patti LaBelle song. I looked at the rest of the night's movies, and I thought, there's nothing I need to stay up for. And I'd just done West Side Story and The English Patient. So it was one of those, like, let me pick my moment to go out on top.
You know, I remember it was I was reading it on Eat Feats. I think Badlands Booker had posted it. He said he went and checked you out, and you were doing fine in, like, you know, hour 7 or something like that. But somebody had said, "Well, English Patient is coming up." And
English Patient was at the was at midnight of the first night, so that was literally 12 hours in.
Well, that's doable.
And no one had seen it, and I'm amazed. You know, it is Times Square. The history of grindhouse cinema mm-hmm. was alive mm-hmm. and well, but obviously Netflix was concerned about the movie selection. I don't think anyone at Netflix had ever seen The English Patient because, surprisingly enough, as you pointed out in last week's Fat Guys at the Movies, there is nudity in it. It's unrated.
Yeah.
About an hour in, Kristen Scott Thomas is completely naked.
Yeah, and I support that.
Right. And that, I think when it won Best Oscar, the Academy Award watchers watched to that moment mm-hmm. and were like, okay, let's just give it the best picture. We don't have to watch the next 2 hours of people reading books and filming. So it wasn't, The English Patient wasn't as grueling as one would think. That yeah. was the pick of Jeff Jones, who, big burly guy from Texas, he won $250,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the movie edition. Okay. He actually was the second person out of the box because New York was calling him. He just wanted the nightlife. So mm-hmm. I ended up being the third person, and it's funny that you bring up Badlands Booker because literally I had chosen my moment. And I'm sitting there with Fletch, and I'm thinking, if I fall asleep during Fletch, that's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I hear this voice behind me, and it's Badlands Booker yelling, you can do it, Crazy Legs. I'll be back tomorrow morning. And I'm making hand signals, like, no, Badlands, stay right there. I'm going to be outside in a moment. I'll smoke a cigar with you. And then the other thing that I would say in terms of my experience was obviously everybody's familiar with the beginning of Stripes. Every time I get fired from a job, I relate to Bill Murray's character, where he loses his job, he loses his girlfriend. Coincidentally, at the moment I decided to step out of the box, which was Friday night at about 9 o'clock, my girlfriend had shown up to tell me, either come home now or you have to win the 10 grand because I'm not going to spend the weekend without you, say. So it was very nice. It was sort of a romantic comedy moment.
Well, that's good.
I'll tell you the toughest movie to make it through, yeah. West Side Story.
Really?
Absolutely. Really? You know what it is? It's not that musicals help you in this endurance scenario because you sing along if you know the tunes. I had never seen West Side Story. It's basically just a choreographed dance fighting movie.
Yeah.
And I can't tell if dance fighting is violent or nonviolent, but I know it doesn't solve anything. So I just kind of was like, this one, and I had just watched Willy Wonka, so I kind of was coming off the high of
the new
Gene Wilder. Yeah.
Or the old one, the original.
Well, the old one. I'm in deference to, even though I'm a huge Johnny Depp fan, in deference to Gene Wilder, I will never see the new one.
Oh, it's a good movie. Okay.
You know, I wish they just made, you know, not a remake. Why not just do The Glass Elevator? Give us the continued story from, you know, Roald Dahl's book.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. You know, it's funny. You know, when I saw, ironically, I saw Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory when we were in Las Vegas for the U.S. Open of Competitive Eating. I actually went to a press screening during the U.S. Open. I bumped out in the evening to go see it.
Was it a chocolate eating contest? Because that would be awesome.
No, I did cheese fries and got completely smoked by Sonya.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cheese fries. Now, see, that's something I might be able to do competitively.
Can you do 4 pounds in like 5 minutes?
I can eat a lot of cheese fries.
You can eat a lot of cheese fries. There used to be a contest on the Queen Mary, the Wiener Schnitzel Chili Cheese Fries Eating Championship.
Which you
would think chili cheese fries on a boat and then to try to eat them fast just sounds like a bad idea. So
they should have it on a tilt-a-whirl. They should like go to Coney Island and put you on the big thing that spins around and turns you upside down.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the unofficial record for the most hot dogs eaten and then the riding the cyclone is a Tim Eater ex Janis. The year that he did 34 and a half,
yeah.
he actually rode the cyclone 3 times. I couldn't do it. So I used to do the burrito challenge in Old Orchard Beach, Maine, which was eat a 2-pound burrito and then ride the pirate ship.
Uh-huh.
And I always threw up over the side. So,
but the crowd underneath you loved that. Huh?
Oh, I mean, this is, you know, people are scooping up, you know, detritus to sell on eBay at this point. But at the time, it was one of those look out below moments, and no one was happy about that.
Oh, that's great. Getting back to the Netflix thing, did anyone make it to the end?
Yes. In fact, there are two. There were 3 pros, I would call them. One was a very nice woman, Cheryl Jones, who had competed 5 years earlier in the collective Netflix movie watching championship. But at that time, in 2003, the record was only 66 hours. So she actually nodded off somewhere around the 68th hour. And then 2 competitors, Claudia Worwa from Germany, who's made 4 attempts at the world record and has gone 117 hours in her most recent attempt, and Suresh Joaquim, who's from Sri Lanka but now lives in Canada. They each crossed the finish line. Susan Sarandon dropped off the last movie, which was Thelma and Louise. And at the moment that the car goes over the cliff, basically two people were human zombies. They'd been awake for 5 days. Mm-hmm. They each are co-record holders, and they each won the 10 grand. Sadly, Netflix doesn't exist in either of their countries now, so I'm hoping to cash in on their lifetime free subscription. Suresh, you may know or you may not know, basically all he does is break Guinness World Records. He holds 32 active records for things that I think probably the three of us have done accidentally. Okay. He's stood on 1 foot for 72 hours. He's played the guitar for 55 hours straight. If you can think of just a foolish activity, he's done it. He's crawled on the floor for 3 days straight. That's an actual Guinness record. So he was kind of the ringer. They were hoping he would go the distance. But crazy Claudia,
you know, yep. I have a feeling that you've probably crawled on the floor for 3 days straight, not at all.
Yeah, no one from Guinness was present at that time, and it was certainly due to an inordinate amount of beer, diapers, and maybe some scantily clad women. So.
Wow.
Huh? The diapers, I think, is the interesting part of that equation.
I don't want to know the rest of that story.
Well, if this was on Eatcast, the competitive eating podcast, I could tell you that I did wear a diaper, much like the NASA woman, to only one contest on the competitive eating circuit, which is the Johnsonville Bratwurst Eating Championship. I didn't have to use the diaper, but I was definitely worried about all that sort of white lightning should be the name of the bratwurst grease.
Wow. I don't. Well, wait. Has this Suresh guy? How much butter has he eaten in one sitting? That's what I.
You know what? He doesn't. They don't recognize any more eating qualifications, so he doesn't do any of the eating stuff. That was sort of a, you know, he had a coach, a handler. Like, he was clearly, you know, sort of in it to win it. But at the same time, he looked pretty bad. He looked like he was in a zombie movie by the end. His eyes were bloodshot red. He was standing. When they played the movie Rent 3 days in, it wasn't that he was watching Rent. It seemed like he was actually in Rent. I mean, he was dancing, singing. It was
He got AIDS from the TV.
Yes. The AIDS helped him stay awake for the next 2 days.
Yeah. So, but I continually went up to Times Square just to check in and cheer the team on. It is amazing to me that in my time out of the box, I was actually able to receive Netflix movies in the mail, watch them, and return them, while these two competitors stayed awake for 5 days. So,
wow.
Truly an amazing event. Netflix celebrated their 10th year anniversary by doing this sort of giant promotion. Mm-hmm. I can only hope for their 15th or 20th. It has nothing to do with endurance watching. By that point, digital cinema will be to the point where Netflix can beam a movie onto the moon, and we can all watch it. But I really hope they don't do it again.
Just beam it into our brain.
Exactly.
Well, you know, Neil and I, earlier this year, we went to this 24-hour science fiction movie marathon here in Columbus. And
it was a pretty devastating experience.
It was tough to get through those. You fell asleep for parts.
I fell asleep during 1984. That's a tough.
I know you had a tough time with Clockwork Orange.
Orange was another.
Well, that was the encore. That was the finale. Movie. That was like it started at noon, with Battlestar Galactica, the original movie from the 70s.
Which was awesome.
Which was ridiculous. And then it ends with Clockwork Orange at like 10 in the morning.
Right.
And that was tough to get through.
It was tough. 1984 was at like 4 o'clock in the morning, though, or 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
the evening hours are certainly the toughest. Claudia called them the dark hours. And in actually medical terms, your blood sugar is at its lowest as you head to those points. So all that sort of popcorn and soda would actually help you to get through. But someone actually asked about Clockwork Orange, not viewing it, but could they use the device that Malcolm McDowell did to pry their eyes open? And that was deemed illegal by Guinness. So.
As long as you didn't have, because there had to be somebody there to do drops in your eye and all that.
Exactly. Yes. I subsisted mostly on beef jerky, caffeine, and the cigar that I left unlit in my mouth for the 12 hours from the Groucho Marx movie to the Fletch movie. So.
Now, I have a question about that. Now, do they regulate any of the, like, the food that you're able to bring in, or do they tell you you can't bring in, like, energy drinks or anything like that?
No, you were allowed any over-the-counter medications, any energy drinks, and here's the best part. This is what would appeal to you guys.
You could get a whole bunch of no-dos, is what you're saying?
You could take no-dos, but the best part was 24-hour caterer.
Ooh. Really?
Every whim you wanted. But here was the interesting thing. The night before, like, and I think about this in sort of the David Blaine-esque way, you want to prepare your body for this. They took us to Virgil's Barbecue.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, I'm not even going to last three movies. Like, I'm eating everything. But for the competitors who were thinking, like, I'm going 5 days, I'm thinking, Virgil's Barbecue, I mean, day two, you're going to have to use the porta potty.
Yeah.
And you only have 10 minutes, and there's 8 competitors. So.
And it's not like you can bring a magazine in there and be like, can you just wait?
No. They were very strict because apparently Guinness is like a secret spy society that shows up in unannounced and will film and will see if you're actually breaking the record. So there was an odd sort of notion of, you know, the Netflix crew hoping that somebody could go 5 days, people being worried about, Guinness saying, you know, no, you didn't break the record because you looked away or you rode a bike while watching movies. But all in all, I think it was pretty amazing. They did bring in Richard Simmons to kind of wake us up, and we danced to YMCA.
Were you sweating to the oldies?
Sounds creepy.
In person, I mean, I wear shorts year-round. Obviously, he wears much shorter shorts year-round.
He doesn't own shorts that go down his entire thigh.
No, he has just swatches of clothing that he just staples to his.
Yep, just different colors for different days.
He's replaced any notion of aerobics with just shrieking. Like, he got in the box and he just started shrieking. And that was enough that I was startled for the next 6 hours. So there was no way I was falling asleep after Richard Simmons had been in the box.
You don't want to. He might take you away with him. We won't speculate.
See, right now, for me, it's a balancing whether or not I would want to do this. But because when you said free catering, I said I will stay for the 5 days just for the free food.
No. There you go. This is how we're going to do it. But we're going to join, and we'll go for free catering, and we'll just feed our faces and like just pass out in like 2 hours.
You know what? You have to eat while looking at the screen. But you could do that. There were a few people in there. You know, there was a kid, Jerry, who's a upcoming filmmaker from Staten Island. He's got a film that he just completed called Stuck Like Chuck, this romantic comedy.
I've heard of that.
He was hoping to go the distance simply so Netflix would distribute his film. But in the end, what got the best of him was the notion of, like, the food and the drink. And then he just went glassy-eyed and nodded off. And they were tapping him on the shoulder, waking him up. And he was disoriented. He didn't know where he was. So,
it can happen. I don't think that they would want people like Kevin and I in this, because we would try and sabotage people. Like, Kevin would be eating a lot of beans or something and just laying down in the middle of the competition. Literally, everyone would get up and leave.
Or
they would suffocate and die.
I could make my famous Texas Trail chili and then, like, use every single porta potty so no one would want to go near it.
So they'd have to leave to go to the bathroom.
When you say Texas Trail chili, everywhere else, if it was anybody else but Kevin Carr making it, I'd be thinking, okay, obviously this is supposed to be served in, you know, the woods of Texas on this woodland. But Texas Trail chili to me from Kevin Carr means that you couldn't contain yourself and somewhere there are skid marks all over Ohio.
It leaves a trail. I'll have to give you the recipe sometimes. It's actually really good. It's made without any tomatoes. It's what they made actually on the trail in Texas when they were doing.
I like it. I like this. We're gonna scheme.
Totally
scheme.
So
the next time they do this, we are either going to win or we're taking everybody out with us.
That's right.
The spectators would be disappointed because if you could fog up the entire plexiglass barn, then no one could see in, and that would be very sad.
You've never been in a car with me. You have no idea my fogging potential on the inside of windows. Was there anything else, any other great revelations on this, anything else you learned from the Netflix challenge?
I learned that you know, much like wine, the best wine is the wine you like the best, and the best movies are the ones you like the best. So I was honored to be a part of the Netflix team. I have the Team Zizou-esque Netflix warm-up. And in fact, the shirt I wore underneath was a little nod to, you know, I only listen to two podcasts. I listen to the Kevin Smith Smodcast, and I listen to Fat Guys at the Movie. So all of my movie knowledge comes from heavy set people who love film. And I sort of felt like I needed to pay homage to that by wearing a silkscreen shirt, which, you know, you guys will get in the mail, that basically says, you know, Gerard Butler's mom loves Neil Miller. And I have to believe it's true, because obviously he just got into like some fisticuffs with a photographer who was probably, you know, talking badly about Neil's mom. So
I definitely appreciate you wearing the shirt. That was a pretty awesome little tribute. And I too listen to Kevin Smith's Smodcast. I don't listen to Fat Guys at the Movies, though.
Well, you know, the only sad thing was the only time that I unveiled the shirt was when I was dancing to YMCA with Richard Simmons. So somehow, Fat Guys at the Movies and Richard Simmons dancing to a song about picking up guys in the local gym.
We would have it no other way.
That's awesome. Well, Legs, thank you so much for coming on the show. That concludes the Internet Only segment.
When we come back, we're going to wrap you up. And just like that, we're wrapping you up. You heard all kinds of shenanigans in the last couple segments.
This has been an interesting show.
We had Joan F. on from the horror movie Extravaganza here
Master
in Columbus, Ohio. Movies. And then you heard, if you listened in the Internet Only segment, to Crazy Legs Conti tell us all about his experience in Times Square at the Netflix Movie Watching Championship.
And our determination to go next year for the free food.
We are going to sabotage it next year and eat the free food.
Absolutely.
There's going to be no food left for anyone else. That would be fun. Just eat all the craft services.
I could manage that.
But anyways, one thing we haven't talked about yet is the box office. We should probably, you know, say some things about that. Further Signs of the Apocalypse, Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
You haven't even seen
million.
The movie. It's a
I'm not
cute
saying
movie.
That. I'm not saying either way.
Oh, wait till you
it's
hear my predictions.
Eagle Eye finished second. Nick and Nora's finished third, which I'm, you know, happy for Nick and Nora. It was a decent flick.
Well, that was relatively soft.
Whatever, man. Don't.
No, it was. It was seriously. It was tracking better than it did. Which nothing wrong with Nick and Nora.
Yeah.
But goes to my prediction for this weekend.
This week, The Express, Body of Lies, Quarantine. What do you think?
Beverly Hills Chihuahua is going to win number one again.
Well, I mean, we've got a lot of light openings. I think if there's any movie that could get there, it's Quarantine.
I don't know about Quarantine. I think
people are waiting for that scary movie.
The Express is going to do better. I think Quarantine's going to have an uptick on Saturday. I just think it's going to get people going, but I think it's going to have a longer life. Because it's really, aside from Saw 5, it's the only other big horror movie coming out.
Coming out in October, which
is, you know, Bodies of Lies. Bodies of Lies is what's being predicted by some to win the weekend, but it's coming neck and neck with Beverly Hills Chihuahua, and all the analysts that I've seen talk about it have basically said, well, Body of Lies should do well because it has directed by Ridley Scott, and it has Leonardo DiCaprio, and it has Russell Crowe.
But it's risky because it's a horror movie.
Yeah, but they're not saying, people are... It's going to do well because people have seen the movie and are really going gaga over it. I really think it's going to be kind of soft for them. And then you look at the fact that The Kingdom is, I think, the best grossing war movie about the war on terror.
And it still didn't do like crazy.
It did like $80 million, I think.
Yeah,
something
which
like that.
Isn't that much.
It's not bad, but not great.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, Beverly Hills Chihuahua. Look for that again to win because I'm going to make you see that movie.
Oh, whatever. When it comes out on DVD, I'll watch it.
I will make them show it at the Netflix thing next year.
Terrible. You're evil, man. But speaking of DVD and Netflix and stuff, let's do our DVD roundup. And what's your pick?
My pick is The Happening. I'm not going to take your other one because I think you wanted to do this next one.
Because I'm not messing with Zohan.
Yeah, the Zohan's out. But
this is not going to happen.
It's not the worst movie you could. It's not like The Love Guru, but it's not a pick.
It's not that good.
The Happening. I like The Happening. M. Night Shyamalan. Much maligned director. Much maligned film. Creepy, creepy as heck film about
people. Mark Wahlberg talks to animals.
Mark Wahlberg is awesome.
My pick is Sleeping Beauty on Blu-ray because it's been remastered for high definition and it looks absolutely fantastic.
Well, and you know, it's a wider frame too.
Yeah.
It's 255.
So I'm told. I haven't watched any of the special features yet, but I'm sure at some point they would have revealed that to me.
Yes. Well, no, features. I'm just letting you know because I talked to Disney about that. I'm
very impressed with Sleeping Beauty. I can't. It'll be interesting to see how they transition a lot of those older Disney movies to Blu-ray, because I know this is the first one that they're coming back and really, really polishing it up for the high def release.
Well, they're doing it. So. They're doing it for high def. Well, since Bambi, they've been scanning them in at 4K resolution.
Whatever that means.
Well, that means it's. What's high def resolution?
1080p.
1080p. Mm-hmm. So it's four times blue high def.
Bo show.
So
awesome. You Don't Mess With Zohan is also out, though. As we said.
Let me talk about my stinker, though.
I have a comment for this as well.
Did you see it?
No, but I have something to say.
Well, here's the thing: you can go rent Slacker Uprising, which is Michael Moore's new film, or you can buy it for $10, or you can download it for free legally off his website by just sending.
Or you can watch it on Hulu.
Or you can watch it on Hulu.
What I don't understand is why would you want to buy this movie if you can watch it for free?
That's my whole point.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's like, why would you, like, on American Carol Essex, why would you want to spoof Michael Moore's movies? His movies don't make any money. He gives them away for free now.
Well, this one he gives away for free because even as a Michael Moore movie goes, not that good. And I guarantee you he said, you know what, I'm going to distribute it on the internet for free because if we release it in theaters, it's literally going to make $20,000 and end there. Just because even his movies, I don't like his movies, but they have a certain sort of entertainment value. They're clever at times and cute and they do funny things. This one is literally him showing audiences cheering for Michael Moore, showing how awesome he is on stage and rallying everybody around to vote for John Kerry, who loses the election.
I think it would have had a better climax had John Kerry won.
If John Kerry had won, it really would have been an inspiring movie. But I mean, it's not even like that. The 2004 election wasn't like 2000. It wasn't even that squeaker that people could argue you stole, blah, 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 blah. John Kerry lost the election. It was close, but there was no big, you know, come down to the wire thing. And it basically is Michael Moore standing up and saying, hey, look how insignificant I really am.
Fair enough. All right, cool. Moving on to the review wrap-up.
There's no sound effect for that.
Crap. We'll start with Body of Lies, which we both saw, and I said it kind of... Did I say rocks or kind of rocks? I don't remember.
I think you said kind of rocks.
It was. It's on the good side.
I said kind of sucks.
And then we had City of Ember. What'd you say?
Which I said it just barely kind of rocks.
And I said it totally kind of rocks, or totally rocks.
Totally rocks.
It totally,
you don't even know what you said.
It's good. It was a good movie. We also had The Express, which I saw, and I said kind of rocks.
But you don't need to see it because he gave it away. I didn't see it, but I did see Quarantine, which I said totally rocked.
Nice. Next week, we've got all kinds of fun stuff. We've got W.
Girl.
Should be fun to talk politics. I love it when we do that. We've also got Sex Drive, which is story of my life. And The Secret Life of Bees, Max Payne, and What Just Happened. So if you'd like to get a hold of us in between now and when we talk about those movies, fatguysthemovies.com. You can also email us, fatguysfilmschoolrejects.com. The phone number, once again, 614-388-8735. I'm done. Everybody knows that he dies.
No, they don't.
That's the point. That's the reason they made the movie.